This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 10th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 369. Lest we forget, Remembrance Day is on November 11th. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and on the big deal feature, the Grey Cup is back in Vancouver. The 111th championship game is November 17th at BC Play Stadium. The Western champion, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, versus the Eastern champion, the Toronto Argonauts. Vancouver is hosting for the 17th time. Canadian football historian, booster, and broadcaster Jim Mullen joins me for a special edition looking back at Vancouver's greatest Grey Cup highlights from 1955 to 2014. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The 111th Grey Cup is coming to BC Play Stadium in Vancouver on November 17th. It will be the 10th time for the Great Canadian Game downtown and 17th time total for Vancouver because there were seven games previous to that played at the gone but not forgotten Empire Stadium. And joining me on this edition of the podcast, the special edition of the podcast, to remember those games, the great games that have been played in Vancouver throughout the years, is Jim Mullen. He's the incoming vice president of the International Federation of American Football, better known as IFAF, also former president of Football Canada. He joins me from Bowen Island to go down memory lane of these great games that were played in Vancouver. Of course, the Grey Cup is integral to Canadian history, Canadian sport history. Now, we're looking at a bit of a top 10 list, and you know, here we are in 2024. The BC Lions will not be playing in this year's game, but the BC Lions celebrated 70 years of their anniversary year in 2024. They debuted in 1954 at Empire Stadium, and the very next year, the Grey Cup came to Vancouver for the first time, and it was the Edmonton Eskimos and Montreal Alouettes. What was special about that game?
Well, one of the things that was special about it, especially because the Lions were not all that competitive in their early going, they brought two very special teams in for the 1955 Grey Cup. A lot of people that know Canadian football lore will remember the 1954 game as Jackie Parker had a 98-yard fumble return off a Chuck Hunziker fumble to decide the game for the Edmonton Eskimos back in the day. These two teams got together again. This would be their second of three times that they would meet in a row, and Edmonton would come out on top again, 35-28. Sam Etcheverry was a special player in the Canadian Football League. He set a Grey Cup record with 508 yards passing in this game. Prince Hal Patterson was his favorite target, 143 yards receiving off of seven receptions. That 508 yards stood until 1996. It was broken by Danny McManus when he was playing for Winnipeg in the 96 Grey Cup. Very long-standing record by Sam Etcheverry. This was the last game where there was 5 points given for a touchdown. So a 35-28 game, there were points flying all over the place. There was over 39,000 at Empire Stadium. That would be another record that would stand until 1976 when Ottawa played Saskatchewan and Gabriel caught the ball in the end zone over Ted Provost. So, and by the way, it was the first Grey Cup game where both Eastern teams and Western teams could play in and face each other in an East-West matchup. And that changed things for good when it came to the start of the modern era for football in Canada.
The second big highlight in Grey Cup history in Vancouver at Empire Stadium, 1958. That's when Winnipeg Blue Bombers beat the Hamilton Tiger Cats 35-28. There was a significant figure roaming the sidelines.
Yeah, way in the background here, you won't be able to see this. I've got a picture of Bud Grant way back there, staring at you with those cold gray blue eyes that he had, with Kenny Plain looking over his shoulder, and they were both consequential in that game. The late writer Jim Coleman and I used to get together at the Pacific Press building and go up for lunch about once every 3 weeks or so. And he would always say, and this would be in the 90s, he'd always say to me, he said, "You know that 89 Grey Cup between Saskatchewan and Hamilton where there were all those points scored, people say it was the greatest Grey Cup of all time." He says, "Balderdash." He said the greatest Grey Cup that he had seen, and he had been to a great many of them, it was in the 40s, actually, in terms of the numbers of Grey Cups that he went to, was the 1958 Grey Cup. And it's available on YouTube. It's black and white. I think they used about three cameras for the thing at Empire Stadium back in the day. But go watch that game because, I mentioned Kenny Plain. Jim Van Pelt was the quarterback. Kenny Plain was a All-American at Iowa. In fact, Winnipeg went down and played some games in Iowa where they got 40,000 to see the Winnipeg Blue Bombers play football. He had some moves where Jim Van Pelt would throw it to him in the flat. He'd catch it and then do a rugby flip to Leo Lewis, who would pick it up on the fly. Like just amazing athleticism that we don't even see necessarily in today's game. So you got guys like Van Pelt, Plain, Lewis, and the other part of this that's really significant about this game is that this would be part of another rivalry run in the Grey Cup. These two teams between 1953 and 1962 would meet each other six times. Winnipeg won, I guess, those six games by a margin of 4-2, but it was a really pitched rivalry between the Ticats and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
Then third on the list, 1966. Now that was significant for, of course, being the face-off of the Rough Riders versus the Rough Riders. The parade night. It was a Friday night parade in downtown Vancouver, and everyone loves a parade. Not everybody loves a riot, and that's what happened. It was Vancouver's first major sports riot.
Well, you mentioned that the Grey Cup was the national classic. One of the things that I learned at a fairly early age was that the Grey Cup was also named the Grand National Drunk. And that's what fed into a riot. I think it may have been their last nighttime Grey Cup parade they ever had. Remember, the Grey Cups used to be played on Saturdays, not on Sundays, just like this game was played in 1966. So Saskatchewan the following day, by the way, they ended a 56-year drought with their first Grey Cup over Ottawa. And the significant number in that was George Reed's 133 yards on the ground. George Reed just impeccable in his entire career in the Canadian Football League out of Washington State. But the other significant numbers from that Friday night parade, 433 arrests in total, 251 for drunken behavior, 162 for unlawful assembly. Vancouver would have to wait, I think, until 1994 to experience the joy of a sports riot again.
And then number four in the list, 1971. That's when the Stampeders beat the Argonauts. That was interesting because of the field, tartan turf, the first artificial turf Grey Cup.
Well, it not only did it have tartan turf, but it had some wonderful West Coast weather that day. The rain was coming down in sheets. And if people remember Empire Stadium, once they put the artificial turf in, there was a 22-inch crown. And if you sat in the first five rows of that stadium, if somebody was on the opposite sideline, all you would see is their shoulders and their head. They had to create this level of a crown so the water would drain off, but it didn't totally drain off. And it was a tight game. Toronto was looking for their first Grey Cup victory, I believe, since 1952. It had been a long time. I may stand to be corrected on that. But they were in scoring range. They were down at the Calgary 11 late in the fourth quarter. Joe Theismann, who changed the pronunciation of his last name to rhyme with Heisman. It technically is his real pronunciation of his name was Theismann. When we went to Notre Dame, he changed the pronunciation to Theismann. Was a big signing for the Toronto Argonauts at quarterback, but he handed it off to the straw that stirs the drink, Leon X-Ray McQuay. And Leon gets the ball, slips on the water-covered turf, hits the ground, the ball pops loose, Calgary recovers. Now, if you watch that on replay again, the ground can't necessarily cause a fumble. It shouldn't have been a fumble, but they ruled it a fumble. By the way, Toronto had a they shut Calgary down, and they had another chance to get the ball late in the fourth quarter. Larry Robinson punts the ball, and I believe it was Mike Eben who fielded the ball, mishandled it because it was so wet that day, and then kicked it out of bounds. Because he kicked it out of bounds, Calgary got the ball back again. Toronto couldn't mount any sort of comeback. They lose 14-11, and it's Calgary's first Grey Cup win since that perfect year they had in 1948, where they were the last undefeated team in Canadian professional football.
And that 1971 game was also interesting, as we found out in recent years, because of an interesting spectator at Empire Stadium. According to a letter that was sent to the Vancouver Province newspaper, unearthed by some interesting sleuths who are trying to get to the bottom of the mystery of DB Cooper, the hijacker, that DB Cooper apparently wrote a letter to the editor of the Vancouver Province and referenced being at the Grey Cup game. So that's part of the lore of Cascadia, of the mystery of what happened to DB Cooper. Well, apparently he went to the Grey Cup in 1971 at Empire Stadium. So that's one of the tens of thousands of people who've enjoyed Grey Cups in Vancouver, according to a letter to the province newspaper editor back in 1971, was DB Cooper himself.
Well, I was at Empire Stadium in 1976 when Crazy George came down in a helicopter. So, have we ever seen Crazy George and DB Cooper in a room at the same time?
Now there was one more Grey Cup at Empire Stadium in 1974, but then it shifted downtown as the BC Lions moved into BC Place Stadium, the stadium beside False Creek, ahead of Expo 86. The first Grey Cup indoors happened in November 27th of 1983. The Lions were playing at home. Having a second chance to win the Grey Cup at home, they faced the formidable opponent in the Toronto Argonauts. Run us through that game.
Yeah, 18-17, the Toronto Argonauts win. The Lions came out with a solid drive. Mervin Fernandez on a touchdown reception from Roy DeWalt, but then the offense really went flat. And this is it, we'll hear this story repeated again, I think, in an upcoming Grey Cup as well later on in the 1980s, but. One quarterback comes out for Toronto, named Conridge Holloway. Another guy goes in by the name of Joe Barnes, changes the pace of the entire game for the Argos, and that allows them to rally to win. Lions had a shot moving the ball in the fourth quarter on a third down play. DeWalt finds BC receiver Jacques Chapdelaine, later to be known as an offensive coordinator with the Lions and a head coach and with the Laval Rouge Or, and won a Vanier Cup there. But it wasn't his day to win a cup, drops the ball, bobbles it, hit him right between the numbers, and that was it for the Lions on their home field.
Yeah, and that was quite a game to witness, history to witness. But then at the time, I was living in Falls Creek, a 13-year-old living in Falls Creek. I couldn't get to sleep that night because all the Toronto fans roaming the seawall in Falls Creek shouting, Argos. They were having too much fun, and I was not. And that was a traumatic experience. The Lions would eventually redeem us years later. But the Grey Cup would come back a couple more times in the 1980s. Tell us about that in 86 and 87.
Yeah, 86. Oddly enough, Vancouver had them back to back. And in 86, the Edmonton Eskimos were prohibitive favorites, and the Hamilton Tiger Cats ended up winning in convincing fashion with Mike Carrigan at quarterback, giving Harold Ballard the opportunity to embrace the Grey Cup and give it a big old smooch. But that wasn't much of a game. It actually turned into a very surprising blowout in an opposite direction. The exciting game between these two happened between Edmonton again, and the Toronto Argonauts. And in 1987, this is a game that went really back and forth. It was a high-scoring game. One of the highlights of the game was Henry Gizmo Williams on a wide field goal attempt from Lance Chomick from 37 yards out. He had missed one from 37 earlier to the right. This one he missed to the left. Gizmo Williams takes it about 8 yards deep in the end zone, weaves his way through the only way this guy can, finds the end zone, chopped by Chomick just as he crosses the goal line for an electrifying return that added to Edmonton's momentum. And there's another clip that if you want to look it up, type in Gizmo Williams Grey Cup return 1987. It's the best TV call ever by a play-by-play guy. The reason I can remember all of these details about Chomick is because Don Whitman, love him or hate him, I loved him. He sets up the field goal. He says, "Lance Chomick, he missed from here. This is from the opposite hash mark. It's from the same distance. Gizmo Williams is X number of yards in the end zone. The kick is up and it's wide." And then he shuts up for the entire return, for the entire, and lets the crowd tell the story, and goes into the end zone. They go to the camera at the field level. And then he says, "And once again, the gizmo delivers." That's all you have to say in a moment like that. You need to look it up if you're interested in seeing something that was totally electrifying.
Oh, it was. In 1987, it was my last year at Vancouver College, and someone, I guess there were too many seats available on level four in areas they couldn't sell them. So someone involved in the football program, someone's parents came and just gave away dozens of tickets. So I had a ticket to, on level four, right in front of the Mitsubishi Diamond Vision scoreboard. Where people didn't like to sit because they couldn't see the scoreboard.
Certainly.
But for that moment of Gizmo Williams and his heroics in that game, to sit there, bird's eye view, and watch him go from one end to the other was just fantastic. And I thought that hey, this is actually the best seat in the house to be able to witness that before my eyes. One of the greatest moments in Grey Cup history, one of the greatest moments in BC Place history. But an even greater moment happened 7 years later, and it's number seven on the list, 1994. This was historic because Baltimore Stallions, or the Baltimore team with a name,
Horse
not
with no name.
horse with no name because of copyright issues. They were supposed to be the Colts. But here they came. The American Invaders came to BC Place Stadium to try to bring the Grey Cup, take the Grey Cup out of Canadian hands. And the BC Lions, we're going to have none of that. And they defended the Grey Cup that day. The game wasn't sold out. It was an interesting atmosphere being 1994, several months after one of Vancouver's other sports riots. But this was also a game with some stars on both sides of the field, some great coaches. Tell us more about this, the epic between the BC Lions and Baltimore on that day.
Yeah, so we've already had some pretty good Grey Cup games in BC Place. We had a 1-point game with BC and Toronto in 83. We had Jerry Colwrick, I needed to mention that, with the 87 game deciding it for Edmonton over Toronto. But 1994, I'm not sure if you could really construct that much drama into a game in terms of this Canadian chalice being at risk of being exported to the United States, Baltimore of all places. And it really what it came down to in that game, there were two quarterbacks that ran through that game for the Lions, Kent Austin and Danny McManus. Can you imagine, Like, I mean, we've just seen it with this edition of the Lions with Nathan Rourke and Vernon Adams Jr., two quality quarterbacks that could start anywhere in the Canadian Football League. There's the Lions with those two guys in their lineup. The guy that never made it to the sidelines of that particular time for in that 1 year, Trent Green, who went on to the Kansas City Chiefs and became an All-Pro in 1 year. But anyway, they both played. Danny McManus finished that game off, and it was a. By the way, I don't want to go too far down the road here, but that 94 run, what a tremendous run! Because if you remember, the 1994 Western Final was Darren Flutie in the snow in that crazy game, maybe the most exciting football playoff game I have ever seen in my life between Calgary and BC. The snow came in right on cue. There were so many momentum shifts in that game, whether it's Ray Alexander's blocked field goal, whether you can just, there's another one that you've got to look up on YouTube. And then the game before, I was in attendance at that game where Damon Allen throws an interception on a second and six as Edmonton can close the game out with a field goal. But Charlie Gordon picks it off, runs it down into Edmonton territory. 3 plays later, Louis Pisaglia is kicking a game-winning field goal. So you've got one game that is decided by two, another game that's decided by that was 38 to another two, and then another game that's coming down to the toe of Louis Pisaglia between Baltimore and BC. And Louis had a shot at that and missed it the first time, right? Inside the 3 minute warning, and then makes it on the second opportunity that he has. And there's one fantastic shot of and it's shot from behind Pisaglia where he puts it up, and there's somebody just sitting right above the entrance in the end zone seats with a Canadian flag, and he's waving a Canadian flag. And you see the ball sailing up through the uprights, and at least for 1 more year, the BC Lions save the Grey Cup for Canada. The next year, Flutie wasn't so lucky in Regina playing for the Calgary Stampeders, as he lost to Baltimore. That was the one game that we'd really like to have back, I think, as Canadians.
Yeah, that 1994 game, Louis Pisaglia's game-winning, cup-winning field goal into the uprights in the west end zone was the greatest moment on the west side of BC Place. Of course, the 2015 Women's World Cup, FIFA Women's World Cup, Carly Lloyd, she punted that from halfway and scored a key goal to beat Japan. That was in the east end zone. So those are tied for the greatest kicks of all time in BC Place Stadium, and maybe one of the greatest games we've seen. At least we haven't seen much in the way of overtime at all in Grey Cup history. But 2005, the overtime game, the Edmonton Eskimos over Montreal Alouettes, 38-35. This was also significant because of the coaching battle. You had Danny Machocha versus Don Matthews. You had one of the greatest coaches of all time in Don Matthews against Danny Machocha. Yet you had the Eskimos pull it out, and at the same time, you had a significant person in the stands. We talked about DB Cooper earlier, but Pamela Anderson was the grand marshal of the parade the day before, and she was a special guest in the stands. Walk us through this one.
Of course, Pamela Anderson getting first discovered at a BC Lions game many years before. Danny Machocha, the interesting thing about him is he came up through Quebec. He's a North End Montreal guy. And I can name you another North End Montreal guy that did pretty well in the CFL as a coach, and his name is Wally Wono. So, there might be something in the water with those North End Montreal Italian guys. Peter Dellarriva also comes to mind in terms of him playing in Montreal, but he's originally out of Hamilton. That game was interesting. You mentioned the overtime. It was the first overtime Grey Cup since 1961. And we were mentioning the rivalry between Hamilton and Winnipeg. That was Kenny Plain running it into the end zone to clinch it for for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers when they went in overtime. People forget this about overtime in the CFL. It used to be 2 10-minute halves, right? They didn't have 2 10-minute halves for overtime here. They had moved to the shootout by 2005. The one thing that I'll remember most of all, because it was I mean, it was a nice balanced battle between Anthony Calvillo and Ricky Ray at quarterback. Mike Pringle was in the backfield. Ben Cahoon was a leading target for Montreal, but it was Edmonton that won on the day. And it was Danny Machocha prematurely celebrating when he thought the game was over in overtime, but there was still one down left for the Montreal Alouettes. And he and quite frankly, Danny hopped out there like Tinkerbell in terms of the way that he celebrated, and then got his headset tangled around him and whatnot. But that was a game that had a lot of momentum shifts in it as well. And once again, it added to the storied rivalry between Edmonton and Montreal that went all the way back to the 1950s.
And we had to wait another 6 years for the Grey Cup to return. But when it returned in 2011, it was the renovated BC Place Stadium. The new retractable roof system was there. The roof was closed that day, of course. But brand new seats, new video screens. BC Place Stadium was renewed, and the Lions had a chance, another chance to win at home. They played the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and it was. Wally Buono pacing the sidelines for the Lions that day.
Well, and I was the PA announcer for that game. And it was 14-0 at halftime. The game was an event, but it wasn't much of a game, quite frankly. The Lions really controlled throughout this game. And they had a big name there for the halftime show. And I'm looking down at the crowd from the PA booth. I'm going, okay, everybody's kind of quieted down here after the first half. People are turning to go get their beer. And I go, ladies and gentlemen, stay in your seats. You're not going to want to miss halftime entertainment with Nickelback. And what did people do, Bob?
Oh, there was a chorus of boos. There were people put down their boos so they could boo and boo and boo. And when that happened, actually, I was actually standing not far away from Gene Simmons of Kiss, who was in the press box watching the game. And I thought to myself, well, I guess if they had a bigger budget, we could have seen Kiss. But here we are with Nickelback, and this is a moment that Jim will never forget.
Well, here's the thing about Nickelback. Whether you like their music or you don't like their music, I had a good seat, of course, from the press box, from the PA booth. They actually put on a really good show. Whether you, like I said, whether you like their music or don't like their music, but when you looked at Chad, the lead singer, like he was anger singing. Because of the reaction from the crowd that night. Like, he was barking back at the audience. But all in all, it was a great weekend, because the best game that was played that weekend happened on the Friday night, and I did that game on radio on the TSN radio network, and I was also the director of that game to get sales moving. And I knew that we had a success story when 2 hours before our ticket manager phoned me and started to chew me out, because we had some contest winners, and we couldn't get two tickets together side by side. So we only got singles left. So you should be happy. That means we have a lower bowl sellout for the Vanier Cup. And if people remember the Vanier Cup from 2011, not only was it well attended, not only was there just under 1 million people watching it on TV, which is unheard of for U Sports football, but they delivered. Both those teams, Laval and McMaster, delivered. McMaster went out to a big 20-0 lead. Laval was the team that was heavily favored in that game. They came rushing back. That game went to overtime. That game emulated somewhat the 1994 Grey Cup we were talking about, because Tyler Papinha had a chance to not have the thing go into overtime and missed on a field goal, but he made it in overtime, and McMaster walked away with the Vanier Cup. That was the nickname for that game came from Dwayne Ford on the TSN TV broadcast. He said, "Best game ever." And you know, in terms of championship games that I've seen, it's on the podium for me.
You didn't have to wait much longer for the next Grey Cup. It came back in 2014. The Lions, of course, were not in it, but Vancouver stepped in because of delays in building the new stadium in Ottawa for the Red Blacks to bring CFL football back to the national capital. So Vancouver stepped in.
Yeah, and you know what? It was an exciting game. It was a rematch of the 1999 game that was played at BC Place, Calgary, and the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And that would be the last time in 99 that the Tiger Cats would win a Grey Cup, and that's still standing as a record against the Tiger Cats. Calgary was leading this game 20-16 late in the fourth quarter. Brandon Banks, we were talking about Gizmo Williams earlier. He rips off a punt return just a little over 80 yards, a fantastic punt return that was called back on a rather dubious blocking penalty. And Brandon Banks, his head imploded along the sidelines and whatnot, and really took the wind out of the sails of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And the Calgary Stampeders walk away with the Grey Cup in 2014. You know, the one game that, you know, I wasn't around for on this earth, that was always of legendary status, though, that we haven't mentioned, is the 1963 Grey Cup that was played between Hamilton and the BC Lions. And that had some star power in it for the BC Lions. It had Joe Capp at quarterback, the quarterback out of Cal that would later go on and play for the for Bud Grant and the Minnesota Vikings, and win an NFC championship, and play a few more years in the NFL after that. And Willie Fleming, who owns the CFL record, they won't take it away from him, for a 109-yard TD run that he owns along with George Dixon. Willie Fleming was on a tear that year. He had an average of 9.2 yards per carry. And he ran out into the flat. There's a high angle shot of him getting tripped up, and big 68 King Kong Angelo Mosca lands on him, knocks him out of the game. The Lions without Willie. It was the Willie and Joe show. The Joe show just wasn't enough for the BC Lions that went flat. Bernie Filoni and Prince Hal Patterson went off in the rest of that game, and Hamilton walks away with a victory. One of the reasons why we mentioned this at the end is that it actually leaps around to one of our greatest Grey Cup moments, which was Angelo Mosca and Joe Capp meeting at an old-timers function for the CFLPA. And then, you know, viral videos at the Grey Cup. Maybe this was the true first viral video at a Grey Cup, with those two old codgers going at it, because Joe wanted to even the score for his old friend Willie. So, you know, that these things linger in the hearts and the minds of people that see these games, right? That's how long a memory can last for and endure, and the passion can endure too. So yeah, those are the Grey Cups in BC, and they, you know what, they intersect with some pretty great eras of the game. They really tell the story of the modern era of the game.
That was Jim Mullen, the incoming vice president of the International Federation of American Football and the former president of Football Canada. Jim joined me from Bowen Island, BC. The Grey Cup Festival begins November 10th with the arrival of the Grey Cup in Vancouver. It all comes down to November 17th at BC Place Stadium. The 111th Grey Cup game kicks off at 3 p.m. Pacific Time. The Western champion, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, versus the Eastern champion, the Toronto Argonauts. Watch it on CTV, TSN, and RDS For a full schedule of free and ticketed events, go to greycupfestival.ca.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In ABC News Australia, what a second Donald Trump presidency might mean for Australia. Australia narrowly avoided new tariffs on locally made steel under the first Trump administration, thanks in part to some careful diplomacy at the time. Trump's first administration was hawkish on China, and Trump has used major speeches to warn China is circling Taiwan. But he has also said he got along great with China's President Xi Jinping and had a very strong relationship with him. His administration will likely again seek to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement only a few years after the Biden administration reversed Trump's first withdrawal. In Kyoto News, Japan PM congratulates Trump on U.S. election victory. Shigeru Ishiba made the remarks days before he is also expected to be re-elected as prime minister in Japan's parliament following a general election in late October. Japan and the United States have been deepening their alliance, extending security partnerships to include like-minded countries such as South Korea and Australia. Also in the Taiwan news, President Lai Ching-te congratulated Trump and Vice President-elect J.D. Vance. In the Anchorage Daily News, what Trump's victory could mean for oil companies and climate change policy. Trump has planned a flurry of actions to bolster U.S. oil and gas companies. He is expected to ease a suite of restrictions on the oil industry's emissions of methane, a potent greenhouse gas. And he will probably cancel the Biden administration's pause on permits for new liquefied natural gas export projects, clearing the way for the industry to build billions of dollars worth of infrastructure that could increase U.S. emissions and keep gas flowing to other nations for decades to come. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, voters reject statewide ranked choice voting by wide margin. The ballot measure would have required officials to put ranked choice voting into place by 2028 for elections for president, Congress, governor, secretary of state, attorney general, treasurer, and labor commissioner. It would have also allowed cities and counties to implement the voting system for local elections and require the secretary of state's office to create a voter education program for the new system. In CascadiaDaily.com, ban on restricting natural gas set to pass. Additionally, Whatcom County voters accepted an amendment to the county charter to ban elected county officials from holding other public offices during their term. In King5.com, Clallam County voted for losing presidential candidate for the first time in 40 years. Clallam County was the last bellwether in the country. Now there are no more. Since 1984, voters in Port Angeles and surrounding towns had voted for the presidential winner, but on November 5th, a majority chose Democrat Kamala Harris over Donald Trump. Clallam County was the last of its kind among the 3,000 counties around the USA. And in the Breaker.News, read these stories. EB offers olive branch to victorious Trump week after vowing to shun some conservatives in BC. And North Shore wastewater treatment plant schedule in flux again? And introducing Bob Mackin. Substack.com. Visit me there too. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Canadian war veterans, Canadian peacekeepers, the men and the women who sacrificed their lives for the good of the country. It is Remembrance Day on November 11th across Canada. Think about them all year long. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to Bob at thebreaker.news.
Corona.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 10th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 10th of November in 1999, the World Anti-Doping Agency was founded in Lausanne, Switzerland, under Canada's Dick Pound? It's a legacy of Canadian Ben Johnson's sole 1988 Olympic steroid scandal. WADA is headquartered in Montreal. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Visit me there too. And sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News as news happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.